Well, through five
on more nights than not so far through the early part of the season, they've been, you know, the biggest positive when it comes to the forward group. So that's a good place to start, Pat. I would imagine it's on your list of positives as well.
It definitely is. The only thing that interests me, guys, and because I am in complete agreement, I think that has been by performance, Lindholm, Tkachuk, whether with Dubé or now with Mangiapane, since Dubé's been hurt. We'll get more into that conversation tomorrow, too, because I think there's a lot to dive into on that respect. But in terms of ice time, and it's not just because of the power play, in terms of ice time, the Monahan-Gaudreau line has still been used as the number one line, at least in terms of how much they are being played. Now, Matthew Tkachuk leads all forwards in terms of even strength time on ice per game at over 15 minutes. But next is Gaudreau at 14.04, then Monahan at 14.01, Lindholm down at 13.10. Now, if you're wondering why, I think the big reason for that, Will, is because Lindholm not only is a power play guy, he is also one of their top penalty killers, so that he's going to eat into to 5-on-5 time. I understand that, so that's probably why we have seen more of Monahan and Gaudreau at even strength. But I have found that somewhat interesting that at least to this point the Lindholm line or Lindholm as the center has not been used 5-on-5 ice time wise like the number one center.
We'll see how the season, I guess, plays out on that, because I think you're right, a lot of that speaks to the amount they've been on the power play in these first few games, and I think that's bumped up the ice time of Monahan and Gaudreau. And I also think there's just maybe a feeling out process as to what Lindholm would be like down the middle by Jeff Ward. Maybe that's true, maybe that's not true. But I do think we're going to see a little bit of separation. I'm not saying it's going to be 5 minutes of separation when it's all said and done, but I do think it's going to get a little bit wider than maybe it is right now.
Okay. What would be takeaway number one for Will Nolte?
Takeaway number one for me is Jacob Markstrom is just as good as advertised. I would suggest that through the five games that he's played, all five so far, he has been the best player on the ice every single game for the Calgary Flames. And I was skeptical in terms of I didn't feel like goaltending was a place they needed to necessarily target in the offseason. I wasn't against it by any means, but I did feel like there was other areas that was holding this team back, and an impactful top six guy maybe would have been higher on my list, the right shot guy. And who knows, it probably was on the Flames list as well, but they prioritized goaltending and he's been worth every single penny so far. And I think he's a big reason why Calgary's got points in three of their five games. Not to take away from the team and say they play bad, but I would suggest at this point, Klein, Jacob Markstrom is their best player and he was their biggest investment in the offseason. So I would say to this point, it's money well spent for the Calgary Flames.
It's just such a calming influence back there. And you just see there's a bit of a confidence. And if there is a breakdown, then all of a sudden you have this guy who's just a rock back there, who for stretches, no one has beaten him clean for long stretches at times. So no, I'm with Will. I think that is absolutely the home run that some people thought it was going to be through five games at least. And when you just see how calm he is, like aside from some misadventures playing the puck, the dude is never out of position. And it really, like, I can't think of another word for it aside from calm, Pat. It's just so nice to see. If there's a breakdown, it's fine, I got this, don't worry about it. It's a little bit different than things we've seen in the past at the goalie position.
It's early, so I think, you know, numbers are it's a little early to be diving too much into. His save percentage down to .911. His even strength save percentage down to .918. But I'm not overly concerned there, because I think that'll work itself out as things go along. But here is the thing that is the most encouraging to me, and it's actually like this is the one that gives me the most confidence that it is going to figure itself out. Right now, there are only two number one goaltenders in this league with a higher high danger save percentage than Jacob Markstrom. In terms of guys who have started four or more games, only Semyon Varlamov and Jordan Binnington have a higher high danger save percentage than Jacob Markstrom's .882. Right now, it's ahead of Carey Price. It's ahead of John Gibson. It's ahead of, you know, some of the other top, Connor Hellebuck. It's ahead of some of the top goaltenders in the league. What this guy is doing on 10 bell chances, and I think, Will, that would be one of your big, because you've mentioned it a couple of times in the group chat, his point blank saves, his 10 Bell saves on chances from Mitch Marner or Austin Matthews or Elias Pettersson or Mark Scheifele or whoever you want to talk about. That is where he has been at his best, and I think the other stuff will work itself out because right now what he does on the highest quality chances is tops in the NHL.
Yeah, and I mean, last night, all you got to do is look at that Wayne Simmonds goal. I know he ends up scoring, but that first save, like he had no chance on that play, and he somehow gets across to make a save on Simmonds, and then somehow is still there for the rebound. I put this on Twitter. Like, that was one of those plays, too, where I'm reminded of how good this league is. We're sitting here talking about Wayne Simmonds and how there's not much left in the tank. There's not a lot of tread there, which is all accurate. But the amount of skill that it takes on that goal last night, he is cruising past the net to get his second or third effort on that rebound is ridiculous. And just one example, that one sticks out. The one-timer and that entire first period, really, that first game against Vancouver, but that first period stop where he went across and robbed Gaudette. I mean, those are stops that are just ones to Pete's point that I think not only calms Markstrom down, but it calms your whole team down. And we've seen it now in two examples. Last night, it allowed the Flames to get back in the game when they got their doors blown off in the first period. Their goaltender kept them in it, and they were only down two. And you look at that first game against Vancouver, that first period, they were absolutely shelled, and he keeps them in there and, in fact, shuts them out all game. So there you go. There's two wins or two games anyways where it's a huge example and a big reason to me why they've played the way they have through five games.
I'll throw in a not so positive one to start things to go the other way, because I agree, and those have both been positive. One takeaway for me, and maybe this gets helped along a little bit when Dylan Dubé returns, but the bottom six forward group and the fourth line specifically, there needs to be either a significant upgrade in terms of the way they're playing, or if that doesn't happen, there needs to be a significant rethink, I believe, in terms of the way, the amount that they put them out there, how they put them out there, what they expect from the fourth line. I mean, right now, you take a look at some of the expected goals for. Joachim Nordstrom's got one of the worst expected goals for in the National Hockey League. And in terms of guys who have played regular minutes, Nordstrom is like top five worst in the league for expected goals for. Lucic is low. Ryan's is low. The possession numbers are bad. You can see it with your own eyes. They struggle. They spend most of their shifts in their own end. They spend a lot of the time defending. If that doesn't start to rectify itself, guys, they're going to need to rethink the personnel on the fourth line. I'm not saying you need to do it right now, but I do think the leash is getting shorter, Will. That's an area where, look, if once you get Dubé back and you're a little healthier and you can roll out the top nine forwards the way you have, I think that you can probably rein in the fourth line minutes that much more. But right now, I think the fourth line is getting used too much for the way they're playing. And until they start to play better, I don't think you can play them as regularly as you have. And if they don't start playing better, I think you need to start looking at different personnel there and trying different players there.
Yeah, for me, it's not as much the personnel. I think the first point you nailed, and that's exactly where I'm at. And I've seen a lot of it, whether it be from media or fans on Twitter. And last night was a prime example. Your team got absolutely destroyed in the first period, and I don't understand why you have to keep rolling four lines. Like, last night was a prime example or a prime opportunity to shorten the bench, and for whatever reason, this coaching staff doesn't want to do it. So I think, to your point, Pat, yes, the fourth line hasn't been great, but a fourth line shouldn't sink or help a team float. Yes, they are parts of the team, but you look at the amount they actually play in a game, that shouldn't be a make or break thing for your club. So I think it's on the coaching staff to change the usage, and they should not be afraid to shorten the bench when they need to, i.e. whether it be Nordstrom, Lucic, Ryan, whatever. That's a situation where I think that that's the one pivot or the one adjustment that I can see through five games, is maybe looking at ways you deploy your bench, especially after a first period like that where you had one shot on.
And the one other thing that I would say is not just the fourth line, Klein. Since Dubé's been out, the bottom six has really struggled. Sam Bennett has struggled mightily through five games. I'm not saying he needs to be as good as he was in the bubble, but he can't be that game-winning goal, I don't know what Bennett and Lucic were doing on that shift. They were just circling around, and Mitch Marner was easily able to find himself into a soft spot, and that was an easy pass for Matthews to make. So Backlund has struggled way more than the Flames can afford him to struggle through five games. Bennett has not been an impact maker positively. Lucic, we've talked about already, is part of the fourth line. You know, whether it's Levo or Samoan or whoever you want to talk about, the bottom six needs to be better, especially while they're going right now where there's a clear top six, bottom six split. Once Dubé comes back, maybe it's a little bit different, but their depth forwards. Like, I haven't seen a lot from Simone. I haven't seen a lot from Levo. We already talked about Nordstrom. Those were three guys that were brought in to help this team's depth. And to this point, I don't believe that they have. It's early, but that is definitely an area that needs to improve.
Yeah, and you look at last night, I think, is a prime example. Toronto's depth outplayed yours, and Toronto is the team that's supposed to be the top-heavy one, where they've spent all this money on the star players, and the depth is just shackles thrown together. Like, for the Leafs, the depth is not supposed to be their strong point, but it's Boyd and it's Simmons scoring big goals for Toronto last night, especially against that team. That cannot happen. And there are a couple of ones that have stood out. I know he scored last night, but Lucic really does feel like he's fighting in a bit. And it's one that we've discussed a little bit. I was expecting a lot more of Josh Levo. I thought a lot of his inconsistencies were based off of injury issues, and he's just given nothing. So yeah, the bottom six has been an issue. And we talk about Michael Backlund, and he is one that I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt on. And I know I'm assuming most here aren't saying, oh yeah, we'll send Backlund to the taxi squad or anything like that. But you look at the first five games, the people who he has spent the most time with out on the ice has changed from game to game. Game one, it's Mangiapane and Ryan. Game two, it's Mangiapane and Bennett. Game three, it's Levo and Lucic. Game four, it's Levo and Bennett. Game five, it's Lucic and Bennett. And so there's, in a season where you've had no preseason games and it was an abbreviated training camp, and we're talking about like working that familiarity and stuff like that, Backlund hasn't had the opportunity to do any of that yet. And we talked a lot about how different parts can be placed in. And so far, it hasn't worked. But I do think that you need some form of familiarity with those guys to try to work through some of it, because right now, just nothing's working with that group.
And just before we move on to the next takeaway, I just wanted to that point. You were talking about Backlund and his usage and who he's been playing with. How played less than 14 minutes last night. Here's Chris Versteeg on the morning show, who would like to see a little bit more from Backlund, but also a little bit more in how the Flames use Backlund. Here's Sportsnet's Chris Versteeg from this morning.
I kind of get a little pissed off watching just how, like, he's not playing, just how little he's playing. He loves playing against top lines. He loves the competition level. He can really... he can check and he can really score, because Bax is a guy that actually has really good skill, and he needs to feel the atmosphere of the game. And at 13 minutes, you just can't do that. There's just no way you can do that. So for me, and the way he plays, it is perfect for Tkachuk. And now Lindholm and Tkachuk are great together too, but just for me, Backlund, more of the natural centerman, more of the natural puck carrier through the neutral zone. It creates more space for Tkachuk to get the puck off rushes, which generally, if you don't have a centerman who can create space, like Lindholm can't do it the same way Backlund can, it's going to be harder for Tkachuk to create in-zone entry goal-scoring chances. So for me, again, going back, I would like to see Tkachuk and Backlund together, but that's really, again, getting into the micromanaging part. I just want to see them get Backlund out there more, give him more of a defined role of what he's going to be executing when he's on the ice.
So that's Versteeg from the morning show. I just wanted to play that because I had heard it a little earlier. I had cut it, and that was a perfect time to get it in there. The last thing I'll say, and Klein, you go to your next takeaway, but the last thing I'll say is I think getting Dubé back is going to be big for Backlund, potentially having Mangiapane back with him, or putting Dubé with him. I just think it'll give a little bit more of an ability for the coaching staff to roll three lines in that regard. So that's the last thing I'll say. But Backlund has struggled, but I also think there's something to what Versteeg's saying, is that, you know, he's also a guy that thrives in certain situations and hasn't necessarily been put in those situations yet. So that's an interesting thing to watch. What's next on the takeaway list for you, Klein?
Well, we did group like three of mine into one here with the bottom six. But I will say another one to no, it's good. It was a great chat. And it was really me being lazy, like kind of the when you have a word count in school. Well, very, 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 very good. I probably could have just lumped them all into one. I'm going to go back on the positive route. I think that, again, talking about the calm, I think Chris Tanev has been very impactful on that blue line, just how reliable he has been. And I think that the pair of him and Hanifin have been something that Calgary can call upon so far, Will. So that D pairing, I've been really impressed with so far with Tanev and Hanifin.
And on the other side of that, I haven't loved. It's only been five games, Pat, but I got to be honest. I don't think the Gio Anderson pairing has been as strong as it was a year ago. I don't know what's going on there. Mm-hmm. I agree with everything Klein said about Tanev. I think he's been a huge positive, and I think as a result, actually, Noah Hanifin's had a really good start to the season through five games, but something just seems off right now with that Giordano-Anderson pairing. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it. I think there's a very good potential. They can certainly work it out and find their feet. But am I alone on that, guys? Am I the only one feeling pairing has not lived up to some of the preseason hype?
So let me give you a little bit of just a statistical breakdown on it, because I think that both you're bang on, Klein, and Will on the other side, you're bang on. So Tanev and Hanifin have played 70 minutes together at even strength, just over 70 minutes together. They are up over 61% in terms of their 5-on-5 possession rate. The Flames have outshot or out-attempted team 68-43 with Hanifin and Tanev on the ice. They have not been on the ice for an even strength goal against at this point. In terms of high danger chances, the Flames are out-chancing teams 13-4 with Tanev and Hanifin on the ice at 5-on-5, and they've done that all with a zone start under 45%. Like, they have been, without question, Calgary's best pairing. They're a top four pairing or a top two pairing, so they're still getting tough matchups on the other side. Tanev and Hanifin have been outstanding together, full stop. On the other side, Will, you're bang on. Anderson and Gio have struggled. They are well underwater in terms of their possession rate, in terms of their chance rate. For instance, with Gio on the ice at 5-on-5, Flames have been outchanced at high danger 19-11 and 18-10 with Anderson on the ice, and their zone starts above 50%, and they're well underwater in terms of possession and chances. They need more from that pairing. I think there is more, and there will be more, but yeah, it has been a stark contrast. Third pairing's been pretty darn good for the way they're being used, but your top four, there is a big-time split. Hanifin and Tanev have been dynamite. Anderson and Gio, compared to their standards, have not been as good. I think they will be fine, but through five games, that's very true.
Well, and I'm curious your guys' thought on it, because I was the loudest or certainly the most vocal on Giordano and his struggles in the bubble, and how I was certainly maybe the most worried on this show about what that means for his season going forward, and knowing the contract situation, his age, all that. I'm not saying that that I'm right or I'm patting myself on the back or anything like that, but is there a way, guys, where the Flames can maybe scale back the minutes for Mark Giordano a little bit? And does he have to play on every power play? Does he have to play on every penalty kill? Is there a stretch of time in games where you elevate Hanifin to play with Anderson for half a period or whatever the case may be, and maybe Gio drops down to play with Nesterov? I know you don't want to be moving things around as the game goes along too much, but I think this team's best opportunity to keep number five or give him a chance to get back to that level, you can't be hammering him 24 or 25 minutes a night. It's just not going
to
work.
I think the best way to do that, Klein, is I think you roll three pairings fairly evenly at even strength, and I think that we're actually starting to see that. You take a look at the way the D-men have been used. Hanifin, Tanev have been used the most at 5-on-5. Then Anderson, Gio. It's not a big-time split, but Valimaki is only averaging about 2 minutes less at 5-on-5 per game than Tanev is. Nesterov only about 3 minutes. And if you can bump the time up a little bit, and it all comes with confidence in that third pairing, but if you can bump Valimaki and Nesterov's time up, and if they continue to play, I thought Nesterov struggled last night. I actually thought it was funny. I thought Valimaki had his best game of the season, maybe the best game of his NHL career, I thought last night. Others disagreed, and that's fine, but I thought Valimaki was dynamite last night. point. But
what an awkward fall, by the way. Anybody else's heart stop when he tumbled into the boards awkwardly?
Yes, because you're like, oh,
yes,
fingers crossed. And
just
he was
knowing
fine.
His history, and I'm like, oh god, no, please. Okay, you're fine, good.
But if they can get more or continue getting the trend they're getting from their third pairing, I think that way you can roll three pairings at even strength, and maybe as it goes along, maybe you can dial back Geo's special teams time. They've already done that for the most part with Anderson on the power play. Maybe you can start to do that on the penalty kill as well.
No, I agree. And the timing of it is interesting because I'm with you. I thought Nesterov was really fighting it last night. And then to say, well, just give him more. But for the overall standpoint of it, I do agree. And I do think that giving Geo a bit less responsibility might be the way to go. Because like to Will's point, that was another one of my takeaways, is that Geo and Anderson have not been what I thought they were going to be at this point in the season. And I think it is now time where Valimaki has been fine for the first five games. Now let's see if there can be a bit of growth there. And if there can be a little bit more responsibility, how does he handle that? Again, you don't have to lock that in. Just see how he responds and see how he handles that. So I like that suggestion a lot. And I think that probably is kind of the way to go all about that, Pat.
Any other takeaways, boys? I think I'm spent. Anybody else have anything else they want to get in before we wrap
up? Well,
and
I think I'm probably alone on this with this show, but I mean, the team is -2 in goal differential when it comes to 5-on-5 play. They haven't been poor by any stretch, but they also haven't been very good. And I think I mentioned Markstrom. I think a good goaltender and a strong power play are masking a couple of things for this team. Like I say, they're not a bottom third team by any stretch when it comes to 5-on-5 play, but I see them very much as a middle-of-the-road team. I don't know how they improve there, but it continues to be a concern for me, because if and when, there's a very good chance this power play does cool down a tad. It's not going to, you know, completely flame out, but I do think there's going to be a couple of instances where maybe it's not as hot. And that maybe is where the concern comes, or maybe when the spotlight is brighter on the 5-on-5 play. But guys, I haven't been in love with their play at even strength.
I'm a little on the other side on that one. I think there are definitely some limitations. We talked about fourth line, that the pairing of Geo and Anderson, I think, can take some big steps forward, or needs to take some big step forward. But they're number 5 in the NHL, Klein, in terms of 5-on-5 possession. Is that everything? No, especially through five games, but they're up over 54% in that regard. They're top 9 for expected goals for. I think if they keep playing the way they have as a team, 5-man unit stuff at 5-on-5, I think the goals start to come, and then that goal differential starts to turn. So I'm less concerned about it than Will is.
I think a lot of the positivity 5-on-5 has come from that top line. And then eventually Gaudreau and Monahan work their way into that conversation. But this kind of goes back to the bottom six thing, where they need that group to help sustain some more shifts in the offensive zone and get things going. And that's, so I am a touch more on Will's side than I am on Pat's side on this one. But I don't think we need to yell at each other about it too much. Just one last takeaway for me is, there have been too many times where we have seen a bit more zone time for the Flames offensively, and to those numbers points, Pat, but there isn't enough of it that's resulting in as many dangerous opportunities as I would like to see. So I think that could be the next step, just doing a little bit more with that possession they're having in the offensive zone. And the last one for me, I haven't noticed one bad thing about Riddick this whole year. I don't have one bad thing to say about him. So I think that's a real step for the Flames.